the fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. Take the ball and run with it all day. The handoff starts here. This is Brady and Lang in the morning on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good morning, one and all. It's Wednesday, July 18th, 2013. Brady and Lang in the morning on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. This would have been the year Thursday. All right, Thursday works. Yeah, the closer we get to Friday, that's fine with me. This would have been the year to get also the British Open radio rights. Get a couple of those babies locked up. Maybe just the Thursday and Friday session. Share it with the other sports stations. They can have Saturday, Sunday, but then we just air British Open radio Thursday and Friday morning.
So we would not be here? We would just be just hanging out in case there was
You'd
a problem with the feed?
Yeah. You'd be here.
Oh, okay.
Someone's got to anchor. Someone's got to, like, transition from hold up. Someone's got to be the Mike Tirico of the broadcast, now, localize
you
it.
Just came back from holiday. You
localize
need more,
the lead.
More of a break already?
I won't be taking I won't be taking July 1st week off again when, you know, my least favorite Leafs are re-signed and my favorite Leafs are amnestied and then come back 2 weeks later and have nothing going on. And plus, when I was a kid and when we all were all kids, they restarted baseball again on Thursday. This is about the third year in a row that they've gone on to Friday play. In fact, interleague play would often restart across baseball on Thursday and you'd play like a four-game series on the weekend. That's not happening anymore. So we've got another night to wait before baseball hits the upper echelon. And I know I heard Sid Sixero or Sid Sixolo, whatever he calls himself when Tim isn't there. It's great. Well, I heard him yesterday opining like you were about the CFL not being on last night and Thursday. But that's you want something to watch. I understand that.
And the league is dropping the ball. They have
not going to bring them. One else is going, hey, you know what? I was going to give this CFL thing one more chance. And it's tonight.
But you're missing
when the Bombers play the Stampeders on Wednesday night when there's nothing else going on.
You're missing the point, Greg. Tonight on the Thursday, if you're doing a highlight show and there's nothing else on where you're leading with the Open Championship, you have other stuff going on. Last night, there's nothing.
I know that.
So you have Winnipeg against the Argos in Winnipeg. People in Winnipeg will come out on a Wednesday or a Friday. They won't care. And it will lead the national sports cast on sports networks
right.
in Canada. You have the country to yourself, and you've dropped the opportunity.
But what you're doing is not bringing really any more CFL fans to the sport. It's not real. That's not really a marketing opportunity. That's just convenient for highlight shows.
If there's nothing else on and people sample
you heard,
it.
You heard
and
what
like
I said,
it,
though.
Yeah, no, I understand so what you're saying. I certainly can't. But you're discounting the fact that someone may stumble across
someone
it.
Out there, it'll be the very first CFL game they ever watch. They'll go, I can't believe I was missing. I didn't even know about this league.
Well, they are also broadcasting the CFL on NBC Sports Network. And it's a chance for...
Hey, that's enough CFL talk, fellas.
And 50,000 people in a nation of 330 million people watching it. I've seen the numbers.
Fine. It's still the CFL's missing an opportunity to have the spotlight and the stage to themselves on a day where they proudly announced the Grey Cup was sold out already in Regina, that they could have made that a big
was
story.
Was it not going to sell out?
Well, no, not, especially not in Regina. Right, but exactly. Still, it's something to be proud about if you're Mark Cohan of the league.
Well, it would be awfully shocking and devastating if it wasn't sold out, right?
Well, I can remember vividly, Greg, it was not that long ago in the late 90s where it was never a sure thing that the Grey Cup would sell out.
Even out west?
Anywhere, well, but especially in Ontario. But yeah, out west.
Yeah, I know. This game's not in Ontario.
But
it's in Saskatchewan.
The price point has changed.
Yeah.
And they're selling for more ticket prices.
Who's the halftime show? Did they announce it already?
I've not heard that. I don't know. I hope it's Rush. I hope it's something a Canadian icon.
I know you do.
Nice.
Farwell's taking the day off advocating for that, actually. He's actually making a presentation to Mark Cohan, who has nothing to do because there's no games going on until Friday night. I watched last night. I had my brother-in-law over for some meal, and I didn't know what to put on. And at first I put on the ESPYs, and I'm like, we're talking. So you ever sit around with friends and you watch TV with the sound completely down? I watched the MLS All-Star game from 2008 on ESPN Classic, a game I was at between West Ham and the MLS All-Stars at BMO Field. This is when people actually still felt good about Toronto FC.
Why? Why?
I didn't know what else to put on. If you put on a movie when you got friends over, sound down, you feel like eventually you're going to want to turn the sound up.
I'm surprised you didn't put the Sunset Channel on or the Fireplace Channel on just for background.
Swiss Chalet.
Yeah.
Channel. I should have put the chicken channel on.
That's where we went last night, as a matter of fact. Oh, it was amazing.
Sauce. Did you bring any sauce in?
Oh, I could just drink that. I love it.
Yeah, bagel. You know, Max could dip his bagel in it this morning.
Is that not the most amazing stuff, that sauce? The
sauce. I know. Incredible. Americans, they don't understand. It's
one of our great inventions.
Yeah. It's a hell of a lot better than some of our bands we've sent down to the U.S. Some of them. Harlequin specifically. 5:35. It's Brady and Lang, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now, more Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590. The Fans.
And that's it. The referee blows it dead. Down to 10 men since the 25th minute. Chivas USA defeat Toronto FC by a score of 1-0.
Dan Dunleavy on the call last night on a slow night in sports. The post-game show for Toronto, the fans were angry. They would call... I don't know if there was one. It's Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We confirm this as well, as George just mentioned. Lawrence Tynes won't play for the New York Giants this year. This is a shocking development because he's on the team, then he's not, then he's on the team, then he's not. And he's been there 6 years, and he's made, been a part of two Super Bowl winning teams. But off to Tampa, he goes at the age of 35. Scotland's own Lawrence Tynes.
Yeah, former Ottawa Renegade kicker. He's been around. He's got some mileage on the body, but good for him to land a job. And that's the life of a kicker, is you always see stories. Guy's got released. He's been cut. 8 days later, someone pulls a hamstring. They're employed. It's the most transient position in the National Football. Like, nothing's even close on a place kicker.
Like, I'd watch a game show of retired, not retired, just for kickers. Like, John Carney has to be in the first round. No one's quite sure whether he's officially hung it up or not at the age of whatever he is now, 45 or 46. Nobody knows.
Well, that's it. I mean, you could be into your early 40s thinking you're going to go to a life of leisure and can get a call that they need a kicker. You show up, you nail a few, and you got the job.
Because it's hard in the other positions to just get off the couch. Well, I think that was a Vinny Testaverde situation a few years ago where they literally called him, and he was not doing anything physically, and they said, we need you to quarterback. Steve DeBerg did that in the late 90s. He was like out of nowhere coming back to a team, and Chris Chandler was the same thing. So there was a bunch of guys out there that basically were left for, certainly left for retired, and then they end up coming their way back. And then there was, I attended one of the weirdest media conferences I ever attended was Eddie Murray retiring as a Detroit Lion, which is, I still think, the dumbest thing. And it happens in the NFL all the time.
Oh, the one-day contract? Yeah.
Yeah, it really doesn't happen in the other sports. But you sign a contract so you can retire as a member of a, I mean, they can honor you no matter what, but you're basically coming back and saying, hey, come over here. We got some crudité and some bottled water. Come on by, and I'm going to sign a one-day contract with the team that I played 10, 12 years for.
Sean Swisham, I spoke to him. He's from Welland, a Niagara region. He's a kicker, and he's bounced around between the Steelers and the Cowboys and other teams. At one point, he was living in his car waiting for a tryout for Dallas because he couldn't afford a hotel room, and then bounced around and finally found work. And that's their lot in life. They never really get the biggest contracts. And they never know truly if they have a couple bad weeks, if they're going to have a job in the third week.
Jason Hansen retired. But would you put it past, I mean, if the Lions have a kicker injury, right?
Oh, of course not.
You're going to see him again.
Well, why wouldn't you, if you're Jim Schwartz? You'd call right away because you know what he can do.
Has David Akers quit? I don't know. Has Alindo Mare quit? I don't know.
Well, I don't think you ever officially retire as a kicker. You're not kicking at that moment, and then the phone rings, and then a week later you're in a different uniform.
I think the Gramatica brothers are done.
Maybe they're. I think they're
no,
some
I don't
of the
think
few.
They're
yeah,
they're not. They don't have phones anymore. But that's Tampa. Also had. I mean, that Martin Gramatica got run over by the truck on the sidelines. Right. Wasn't that a camera truck?
The camera
or some
truck.
Sort?
Yeah. Well, he was trying to warm up, I believe.
Yeah. So that's not as bad as Vince Coleman getting run over by the turf machine in St. Louis, but it's pretty close. We're watching British Open coverage right now. They're out en masse. Miguel Angel Jimenez really out of the gate in the most notable hurry at 5 under par. Through 11 holes so far. Scores are low, as in good, certainly for a couple Americans, Dustin Johnson and the Scottish Open champion from last weekend, Phil Mickelson, even.
And the weather is absolutely serene on the Scottish coastline. And just check the forecast right now. It's 21 degrees.
Is it on the coast? I'm just asking.
No,
I
it is. Know. Yes, it is. Right. Yeah, 21 degrees and sunny and without any wind. And for the golfers who are out there now with that kind of weather, I mean, it's you're trying to get as low a score as you can before, because the next day you could show up and the wind's coming sideways off the North Sea and you're lucky to break par. So if you're going to get any birdies, this might be the time to do it.
I agree. We're getting this. We're not getting this from the analysts on the go. So you want to get as low a score as possible today.
Well, just because of the weather. You don't know, because if the weather is nice, that's you might be your only opportunity to grab a lot of birdies.
Right.
Try
harder today than you would if bad weather's coming. You try harder.
Well, yes.
I'm asking. I don't know.
Well,
you're breaking it down for me. I'm just giving scores out.
I'm watching some of these guys miss some putts, and they're going to regret missing putts in a day like today because if the wind is coming hard.
Right, okay.
And they're having trouble hitting the green, and then you're lucky to hit the green in regulation.
Yes.
Then you really have to, then you have no margin for error in your putting.
I think you're right. They would rather make the putt.
Yes, they would rather make the putt.
Look at those bunkers. See, I've played links courses 3 or 4 times. And I've been once in a bunker where you got to climb down on a ladder. Have you ever done that?
No, but I've heard about it.
And
you can't even see the top of it.
No, absolute, virtual insanity.
What'd you do?
Like
Jamiroquai. You hit it sideways just to get out? Or how do you get out of it?
I can't even remember. I might have just like flipped it. like a ball retriever. I used a ball retriever to get out. And then I just lobbed it over my head. But it's like salt. Basically, if you spill it in a restaurant, you throw it over your shoulder. I think that's what ended up happening. So we'll get to it out of the gate at 6 o'clock. But the report from Joe Posnanski of Espn.com that the Toronto Blue Jays will not be entertaining offers for Josh Johnson. Now, it's still early. You know, like it is with their record. Okay, it's not anymore. But I won't be shocked if Josh Johnson gets. I think this is a neat thing to say. But at the same time, the day of reckoning may come. And somebody might get desperate. And if there's a desperate phone call to Alex Anthopoulos, just because he's hinting on July 16th or 17th he will not trade Josh Johnson, I hope that's not a good enough reason to not trade Josh Johnson. If a firm offer comes in from a team that just says, hey, we just had a guy go down with a rotator cuff, our number 4 starter is a complete and utter mess, we had to send a guy down to AAA, and we need to make the playoffs, and we got to roll the dice here and hope Josh Johnson can give us 4 or 5 quality starts out of the 11 he's going
to
make.
It smacks of a calculated move by Anthopoulos to put that out there to maybe get people thinking, oh, if I got to get him, I better move soon before he makes up his mind for sure. Call Anthopoulos in the next few days. I know what you're thinking, but hey, this is what we'd like to offer to get him. Could we do a deal? Because that may just be driving up the price and get more people thinking and move on him. Well, I don't want to lose the guy because I can't get Garza because it would cost too much, but I could get Josh Johnson.
Yeah, is he someone? That's a great point. Is he someone's consolation prize, right? In essence, that's what you're kind of looking at. If Garza goes early, it kind of tips the dominoes, one way as opposed to the other way. And if your rival gets a pitcher, let's say Cincinnati gets a pitcher, Pittsburgh may look and say they need to. If Arizona gets a pitcher, the Dodgers may look with their wads of money and say, well, we sure can't afford to miss again, not while we're back in it, not while, Puig has reignited the franchise. So we need to go out and get somebody that can supplement the very good arms we've already got.
And I don't think Washington's in a position after all the games they won last year and the expectations this year to sit idle at the deadline.
Oh, like we said the other day, and I think we're right, Washington and the Angels missed the playoffs. There's going to be some rock and roll in the offseason. That's not what those rosters were built for. And Washington will keep getting, they'll keep getting better in a weird way because Harper will get older and, Gonzalez is still there and Strasburg speaks for himself, although he's not had quite the year some expected. But yeah, they actually, Dan Heron's been an utter disaster there, so they need help.
Yeah, and then what could they offer? What would they be willing to offer? And what do they have in the system? Because it seems like it's still a lot of young talent in their farm system, considering the state of the franchise, that may be able to offer Anthopoulos in a deal like that.
They're a deep team. They're a lot like the Blue Jays were. And let's not forget, what the Blue Jays trade? 5 of their best 12 prospects, or was 4 of their best 9 prospects, basically, to the Marlins and the Mets?
Yeah.
They sure traded their best position player and their best pitcher in Syndergaard and Darno. So.
Well, and what we see from Syndergaard, it makes you a little queasy sometimes as a Jays fan to see the way he pitched in that prospects game.
Yeah, so we'll keep you posted on British Open all morning. Phil Mickelson currently right now hitting out of the rough on the 6th hole. And a lot of the early goers as well. Dustin Johnson, Brant Snedeker, both now 2 under par. Bubba Watson, the Masters champ from 2 years ago. or a year and a half ago, basically, is even par through seven. We'll keep you posted as the morning rolls on. And if Mikhail Grabowski wants to sign anywhere in the next 3 hours, that's good also. Let's do Now and Then for July 18th on a Thursday.
Now on Brady and Lang. Now and Then. A contemplative and reflective look back on great and not-so-great snapshots in time. And 4 minutes of radio Greg and Jim don't have to come up with on their own. Not exactly a string.
Ryan Favreau in with Now and Then, our producer. Did you have a geographical report on Muirfield?
No, it was Nico was wrong. He was like, it's not on the coast.
And then I'm like, isn't it? Okay.
It is. The golf course is, but there's a Muirfield, Scotland, then, that's in the center of the country.
When they're standing by the ocean, Nico, I assume they're on the coast.
Nice double checking,
yeah.
Nico.
Well, yeah, Lang just slapped you around right there. That was ugly. Have some more cake, baby. Seriously, that was bad.
He wears shorts every day to the office.
Well, but it relaxes him, apparently. Yeah. Feel free. Sure. Okay. It's just, awkward silence. That's all it is.
Shut up, Nico. So July 18th.
Did you watch the 2008 MLS All-Star Game last night? It was great television.
No, you know, I actually turned on Toronto FC for the first time all year last night.
I stayed up.
Well, I was trying to go to sleep. I was trying to fall asleep.
Like 10:45.
It was awful. It really, honestly, like you make jokes about how bad. It was terrible.
It's a terrible product.
Chivas went a man down in like the 30th minute. I'm like, oh, they might pull this one out, and they were awful.
I want to take my 5-year-old to a game. They play Red Bull. They play Thierry Henry on Saturday. I tell my kid someday he saw Thierry Henry play live?
Well, he raised him as a Red Bulls fan.
But Greg, if they can't beat Chivas with 10 men, what are they going to do against the Red Bulls?
Seriously, I've never seen guys like, there's open net for a guy. He's missing tap-ins. I mean, in soccer, it's terrible.
I had high hopes with the Payne Nelson regime. I'm like, I can't give up on it.
Well, Preki should have been around longer.
You love your Preki jokes.
Okay, July 18th on this day. It's a really depressing day in history. 1925, Hitler publishes Mein Kampf. That's not late reading for your coffee table. Nadia Comaneci wins gold with a perfect 10 score in 1976. Gymnastics, come on, who cares?
Out on the play there. I'm raising a gymnastics daughter. She'd be slapping you right now, Ryan, if you said that.
Does she know Nadia Comaneci?
No, she has not been exposed to her yet. She knows Gabby Douglas. Gabby Douglas is big in our house.
Oh, Gabby Douglas, okay. Mary Lou Retton?
She's
Mitch Gaylord, can you show her American Anthem?
Why are you teaching her the history of the game?
What's that? I know what you're doing.
Teaching her the...
And so does he.
1984, some crazy dude in California kills 21 people at a McDonald's.
I absolutely remember this. Really? It was a mass killing in San Diego. Yeah.
San Ysidro, and it was a...
San Ysidro.
A sniper from across the building took him out through like a pane of glass, and it was one of the great sniper shots ever.
By the way, that is a district in the south of San Diego. They'll probably gloss over that in Anchorman 2, because isn't that Anchorman 2 more set in the mid-80s?
Yeah, that's true.
Well, there'll be recovery from a mass shooting. Yeah.
What else we got? 2003, Kobe Bryant was charged with sexual... I don't know. It's all July 18th. It's going to be a bad day. It started with Toronto FC losing.
All right.
Michael Vick was indicted in connection to the dogfighting investigation on this date.
Wow.
What else can we do?
So what was the Kobe Bryant one?
That's when he was charged with sexual assault in Colorado.
Yeah.
Everybody forgets that now.
I sure don't, but it's amazing how we really rushed to judgment on that way too early.
Yeah.
Think about that. That was pre-Twitter. That was pre-so much stuff. Like, Bryant, he was flying to Eagle, Colorado to be in court in the daytime and then getting on the court for the Lakers that night, wherever they were.
Wasn't that the time he bought his wife the massive diamond as sort of
that would be the one time to do it.
Yeah, but it was, and she's sitting there at the press conference, and it looked like something out of the Canadian Shield on a ring.
It was a big ring. Now, I can't remember. Did they get together? They're still together. They were going to divorce. Now, they're not.
Yeah, I think that's
George, accurate. You know this stuff. Come on.
I think they're still together. I think.
Yeah, no,
Rocky Roads, though.
Okay.
Rocky Roads.
It's not been a smooth marriage.
And those kids will make it,
though. And Tom and Giselle, are they okay? I had to check in daily on Tom.
They have like
Tom
a $50,000 toilet. Isn't that insane?
What?
Tom Brady and Giselle.
I got that.
Well, the moat. The moat that protects their yard.
50 grand. Teated.
Jeez.
Aren't you going to do birthdays?
Yeah, let's
Since
do birthdays.
Since you're so depressed by all this awful news.
I know. Nelson Mandela, how old is he today?
85.
89.
95, boys.
Oh, my gosh.
Goodness.
I feel terrible now. He doesn't look a day over 89.
Joe,
he's hanging in there.
Joe Torre, how old there, George?
89.
73.
75.
77.
He's 73. He's cheating. He's looking at
me. I didn't look.
Oh, sure. God. So he was managing in his 70s. Should they cut off Major League Baseball managers at 70?
None of you're good.
Leland's got another year. Should they cut them off?
Another year?
The policy's meant to favor the Tigers.
I like Leland.
Stop. If only he managed World Series games like they were All-Star games. I'd be really happy about that. Try hard there.
That's enough Tigers talk.
Sure it is. You're damn right it is.
Let's about thespian Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel is 34.
Shakespeare trained.
No way. 42.
Heavens. Yeah, I'm going 40.
He's 76. No, he's 46. And how about this? Maybe the best soundtrack song ever. The number one song, 1982.
Oh, I was expecting Footloose. Okay.
Yeah, you would be.
Or don't you
Survivor's Eye of the Tiger. It's the best soundtrack song.
It's 30 years ago today, then. Number one single 30 years ago today, huh?
No, 82.
Yeah, 31 years ago. Okay.
Look at that math.
Oh, this, it's hard to knock this off the perch for number one, Ryan. Yeah, it's hard to argue.
Burning Heart, though, come. It's awfully close, isn't it? A lot of people don't think
so. Rocky V soundtrack, though?
Is there anything on
supersede
that? What's on the Rocky Balboa soundtrack? Is there anything on that?
And how many Rocky
Rocky
songs
Balboa's
are
good.
Your,
Rocky V has a terrible rap song at the beginning and end of the movie, doesn't it?
But that soundtrack, Greg, it's, you know, the part where he's in the Ferrari. There's no easy way out because there isn't.
Well, that's Rocky IV.
Rocky IV, I mean, that's
Rocky
what I meant.
Rocky V is the one with his son who's passed away and has a terrible rap song at the beginning. We should try and find it so people have no reason to listen for the next
three hours. We're going to be late for a top hour. A lot of sports stories are happening.
Right.
Let's get to this.
You're instructing me to move on then? I will. 5:56, Brady and Lang, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Are the Jays really not going to deal Josh Johnson?
The way he has performed, what are you getting? And you may be better off having him perform well in the second half, giving him the one-year qualifying offer of $14 million or so. And if he takes it, great, you've got him for 1 year. And if he doesn't take it and he signs somewhere else, you get the draft pick.
You're listening to Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Our own Ken Rosenthal, thoughts on the Blue Jays not trading, possibly, Josh Johnson at the trade deadline a couple weeks from today. Good morning, one and all. It's Brady and Lang on the slowest sports week imaginable, but we keep you entertained this morning. Loads to get to. July the 18th on a Thursday. Three things we'll get to before 6:15. Mike Miller, no longer a member of the Miami Heat. Is he going to be a valuable pickup to derail the Heat from becoming three-time champions? Andrew Wiggins says he wants to play for the Toronto Raptors. But what else would he say? Or is it pretty legit that he'd love to play for his hometown team? But we begin with the Blue Jays. They won't go again, as George mentioned, until Friday night at home against Tampa. It's a big series. It's a big homestand. 10 games with Tampa, the LA Dodgers, and then they'll finish it up with four against the Houston Astros before heading out west, hitting the road. They haven't been on the road, obviously, in a long time for a protracted road trip. But it's pretty critical as well to make some calls for Alex Anthopoulos in the next 2 weeks, Jim, regarding some of his assets and whether there are phone calls or not. A lot of reports yesterday, Jeff Passan mentioned it from Yahoo, Jerry Krasning from ESPN, that the rival executives, if you will, are saying they're hearing thanks but no thanks when they inquire, or at least inquire about the availability of, if not specifically, about Josh Johnson, a 5.16 ERA, about a month on the disabled list. It's been a disastrous season for the 29-year-old who, with, I think it was safe to say, with any kind of good year, was going to be the elite free agent among pitchers heading into the offseason. Matt Garza has probably replaced him as that by being as good for the Cubs this year and on a bad team as he was last year. But this was supposed to be, next to Jose Reyes, this was the next big guy in the Marlins deal that was going to have Mark Burley be steady, but Johnson was going to be your potential number one, number two starter.
And financially, if he had a good year, he would have been receiving contract offers well north of the proposed $50 million one-year deal that he might get for a qualifying offer in the offseason. He'd be in the $27 million a year range easily on the open market because pitching is that much of a commodity in baseball. But this is a mistake by Anthopoulos, if he's really serious about that, by not dealing Johnson at the deadline. To say, I'm going to give him a qualifying offer. He turns it down, signs elsewhere, you get a draft pick. The draft pick is years away from helping the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
After what they gave up in the offseason, to get him at the deadline and get a prospect that's a little bit closer, maybe a year or two closer to playing, is something that's more palatable in my mind.
Well, 416-870-0590, star 590, 888-666-0590, and you can, of course, text us at 590-590 on Twitter, Jim Lang 590, Brady Fan 590. Do you look and say they should not do this because it affects the clubhouse atmosphere, the idea that they're going to keep this group together and at least try and let them for July, August, early part of September try and claw their way back into it? Does it send a message to all these veteran players that say, hey, you know, it's a bait and switch. We're going to give you all these assets for 4 months, let you all play together, but the second it's not working, we're going to pull one of them away and let you dig out yourself. I don't know if it's that or if it's simply that Anthopoulos would be, maybe as you're implying, kind of embarrassed about what the return might be from another team.
Well, and it's more of an issue in the clubhouse if you're dealing Mark Burley, not Josh Johnson, because Mark Burley's been giving you more quality starting pitching. That would have a more of a negative impact in the clubhouse.
But he's also a guy that is expected back next year and is signed for a longer period of time.
Right. But see, I can't see how this would be a real negative in the clubhouse when people have been around baseball a long time, Greg, knowing that Josh Johnson likely won't be back.
Part of the business, is what you're saying.
Cold-hearted part of the business. He has struggled. He's not really helped the team. He's not gone consistently deep into games. It's not a huge loss. You know that J-Hap, Brandon Morrow are going to be healthy and on the horizon, and Ricky
Romero. I don't know about that.
But you do know that Ricky.
You're hoping they are.
Yeah, and you do know Ricky Romero is going through a really quality time the last six starts for the Buffalo Bisons, and many people expect to see him sooner rather than later. We may see him pitching as a member of the rotation before the end of the month.
I don't know. I've gone back and forth on this. It's obviously the biggest question, the most pressing issue for Alex Anthopoulos in the mid-season part of things. What they do in the off-season is an even bigger dilemma, is how far do they dip into free agency again? Remember, it really is only Melky Cabrera they went and acquired in free agency. And as we've talked about, I think he got a deal he wasn't going to get for most teams because of people being really wary about the PEDs and wary about whether the body would hold up. And that player is on the disabled list right now and is really not, you know, he's looked kind of unsteady all year in terms of foot speed. He's not one of the faster players, period, but he was obviously legging out a lot more hits last year when he was hitting 355 atop the National League.
I mean, to his credit, whatever he's done offensively has been done with bad legs and bad hamstrings all year.
True.
And I'll give the player credit, Melky Cabrera, for actually fighting through a lot of injuries that other players may have shut it down earlier. I think he just got to the point physically where he just couldn't carry on effectively and had to take some breaks.
It's just tough. You go back to June 17th, and that was the game you and I were at Rogers Center doing some of those interviews, and Josh Johnson goes 7 3rd innings, 5 hits, shutout ball, 2 walks, 10 strikeouts, has great control all night, and you're going, okay, you know, he's arrived. And he had actually I thought people hammered on him unnecessarily for a start at home against Texas. He went 5 innings, didn't go deep, but a lot of pitches. That was after the 18-inning game the day before. But there was a span of about 4 starts there in June, right when he came off the DL. I mean, he came right off the DL into San Francisco and didn't win the game, but he was really good out there playing against the Giants and a good offense. So I thought it was coming around to the point where there's no way they'd trade him. But if it's because his value is too low, he got roughed up by Detroit early at the start of the month. He was terrible against Baltimore, as we know, this past weekend. And I don't know where you go from here with him.
And I think that is a conversation that's going on in the hierarchy of the Toronto Blue Jays front office. What exactly is their best move at Josh Johnson? I don't think anyone in their right mind believes that he's going to be back in a Blue Jays uniform. And I'd be stunned. I think everyone in baseball would be stunned if he accepted their qualifying offer in the offseason.
Yeah.
Someone in the National League is going to give him a little bit more money, and I think he'd be all too happy to leave the American League East and go back to the National League.
I mean, the Blue Jays have, no matter what, he's really the only pending free agent. They've got to get they've got to get a deal done with Colby Rasmus that could go to arbitration, but I don't think anyone worries about signing him. They've got $110 million committed already in the offseason. So if you're thinking about adding elite players, Johnson just jacks the payroll up another $15, $16 million. And if you don't think he's good value for that, you may as well go somewhere else. I just worry that they're starting pitching. As you note, guys are going to come back, and a couple of them will probably work out. Drabek, Hutchison, even Morrow. Morrow has to work out for them. I said the other day, I think Romero has to. He has to contribute in the next 2 years. That may be the difference between playoffs and no playoffs. He has to get back to some semblance of the form, 80% if it's not 100% of what he was.
And if that's 12, 13 wins a year, 180 innings, they will take it. For the amount of time and money they've invested in developing him and the contract that he has in the books, he has to be that kind of productive and that effective of a pitcher. Just for logical and financial reasons.
All right, you almost got to play. We'll talk more about the Blue Jays as the morning continues. They get going again tomorrow night at home against the Rays. I don't know if this is sort of story, not a story here. They had the ESPY Awards out in California last night, and they also had something known as the Gatorade Student Awards. And there was an interviewer there who talked to Andrew Wiggins, who was named the Prep Athlete of the Year from, of course, going to the Huntington School in West Virginia. He's going to Kansas, play for the Jayhawks. He's a one-and-done player, and he'll probably be the number one overall draft pick next June in the NBA draft. So he's from Vaughn, and he says yesterday that he would, this was how the question was phrased, if the NBA draft was tomorrow, which team do you think would be drafting you? The question's more, hey, where could you see yourself playing, as in, who are some of the awful teams that may get a shot at you? And he actually kind of alters the question to give an answer, and his answer was, I would like to say the Raptors. I want to play for them. And the story, again, it's sort of story, not a story. There's a lot of buzz about it. He won't get to choose, and I guess it's encouraging to some extent, but I wouldn't read too much into it because the lottery balls still have to fall the right way. And whether it's going to be a long season in Raptor land of 15 wins, of 20 wins, whatever, they're as Tim Leiwicki said in his interview with Bloomberg, we played a little bit of it yesterday, they're in the ditch right now. They're not even where the Leafs are, and they're not even where Toronto FC is, where, although they're dreadful, it would take only a couple players to get out. It's going to take a lot more time than that for the Raptors to rise through what's getting to be a better Eastern Conference than it's been for years.
And there's already buzz out of the University of Kansas of how good Wiggins has looked in some of their preseason workouts, offseason sort of informal get-togethers, what kind of a talent he is. If he plays like most people expect him to this year in an elite NCAA program, Greg, there will be such a market for him, for teams who think are bottom feeders, for good teams that think they can be elite teams to get him. That's why it makes it so hard to envision the Raptors. Even without the lottery balls, other bad teams are going to teams are going to try to trade up and get that pick. So you're going to see possibly a Lakers team try to trade up and get a pick from, a Charlotte, so they can have a chance to get the lottery to get a kid like that.
You're right, but I do wonder if there are more than enough Raptors fans that say, enough of the draft. Let's not take any chances here. Let's be good. Let's actually, can you give me playoff basketball? Because it's really top heavy, the first five teams in the East, and after that, it's a bit of a crapshoot. And as we've noted, any kind of half-decent start with the Raptors this year with Dwayne Casey, and if they're not in the playoffs, they're awfully close. We sat around after shows, Raptors would win, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, they both lose, and we'd go, they're going to be in it. Like, they're either getting in or they're going to be right there. And then I think they went in the tank and lost seven straight, or it was just a disastrous run. They lost to the teams they had to beat.
Oh, in February, it was awful. Yeah.
But at the same time, next year, when I look at it and I think it's a full year of Rudy Gay, the Bargnani thing is in the rearview mirror. It's a full year of Kyle Lowry, which last year was, and hopefully he stays healthy. He's coming into a contract year. This is a good enough team is constructed to make the playoffs.
And that's a dilemma every Raptors fan is facing. Reading that comment from Wiggins, you want them to make the playoffs. You want them to be competitive. At the same time, the back of your head, you're thinking, my goodness, what if? What if we got him? We could have him for a decade. How good could we be?
I know, but it's a real chance. And you're right. You may still be mired in mediocrity if you don't end up going for it. We want to give you two tickets to Blue Jays Rays coming up at 7:15 this morning and VIP access to meet Carlos Delgado this weekend. This is really a weekend all about Carlos Delgado. He'll be signing autographs there, and we'll get you to the front of the line. We'll tell you how. Coming up after 7 o'clock.
Now, more of Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
This is a song from Rocky V, isn't it? Yeah, I know. I'm getting the shakes just thinking about it. I went opening night to see Rocky V on a Friday night.
Why?
In like November of... I had high hopes. Rocky IV was fantastic. I think I saw Rocky IV twice. In the theater in the opening week and a half. I read a story about a guy we mentioned, Die Hard, turned 25, and a guy who wrote an ode to it, saw it 15 times that summer. Like, I've seen a movie three times in the theater as a kid over the course of maybe a year. The Batman movie in 89 I saw three times very randomly, just happened to go a couple extra times with buddies after seeing it on the premiere night. But 15 times for Die Hard. In the summer.
And now I wanted this to be professional.
And now we're at the point in our family, if we think we're going to go to a movie, automatically we go to YouTube and look at the preview before we make a choice. And that's the idea back then when you saw Rocky V, you really didn't have a good idea of how good or bad it could be.
I should have.
But now, if you think...
It was my worst decision at age 19, but it was up there.
And now, if you're 19, you're like, you're not sure if you're going to spend the money to go to the movie. I'll just see the trailer on YouTube and go, nah, I'm not going to do it. Or, yeah, that looks okay. I'll check it out.
So is it like a voting process? It's like a democratic... Yeah. Like, what if you don't... can you veto it?
No.
Yeah,
no.
You can.
No, I can't.
You could if you wanted to.
No, I can't. Not really.
Well, Lincoln, you could veto that because that ends quite badly. Yes, I don't want your daughters knowing about that.
No, is this Lincoln the Vampire Hunter Lincoln?
Well, they'd probably prefer to see that. My kids probably will at some point in time. Wait till we get to Bill Clinton Zombie Hunter in 50 years. Although I don't, he was hunting other stuff for much of his tenure. Yeah, cougars instead of zombies. Thank you very much for that. I'm not sure Monica Lewinsky qualifies as a cougar, but good try. She was like. All right, put your claws back in and stop talking in my headset, and we'll move right along here. NHL GMs got a new concussion protocol a couple of years ago. Disaster, obviously, with so many injuries, and obviously at the height of it, really was Sidney Crosby's injury. But there's stats coming out from St. Mike's Hospital in Toronto that note the rate of concussions last year, now short season and all that, did not go down after the hits to the head rule. And as a result, they're sort of wondering where they go from here. They're body checking another player in the head as the main point of contact was made illegal in the 10-11 season. And they modified the rule to include all hits to the head. Obviously some of the more blatant ones, Mike Richards, David Booth, Mark Savard getting hit by Matt Cook, and obviously the Crosby Stecco one, which was certainly deemed, most logical people have deemed it to be more of an accident at the Winter Classic. But concussions aren't going down, and the Ontario Neurotrauma Foundation and the Canadian Institutes of Health Research are kind of up in arms as to, what do we do now? Here's some of the suggestions from some of the doctors. Ban fighting. Okay, there's that. Harsher penalties for teams and players who inflict concussions. Changing equipment, and obviously change the ice size. And I guess that would mean, Jim, simply make the ice bigger. We've talked about that, whether slightly bigger ice gives these players a lot. When we're playing in the same rinks that we were 25, 30 years ago, smaller players, smaller equipment, you're bound to have some problems. And we see in the NFL, there's some people that think even a slightly wider field in the NFL would have less bump and grind than it does right now.
And it's a combination of all those things you mentioned, Greg. The average hockey player, size-wise, you've gone from forwards who are 180, defensemen 200. Now you've gone add 20, 25 pounds of muscle, of solid weight, not just fat, of well-trained beef on these bodies. Their equipment is better that they use, and they're faster players. In the old physics, the only thing I remember from physics is force is equal to mass times acceleration.
And that's more than I remember.
So you get a 220-pound defenseman who can skate faster at making contact with a 200-pound forward, even if the equipment and the hit is clean, the whiplash effect can cause an injury.
And I think most people are with equipment where it used to have to hurt as much to hit somebody as it was to get hit. And that's just totally been eliminated. All the pain and violence goes right from the equipment back to the other person. You shouldn't be able to run around like a missile like some of these guys do.
And feel nothing.
That's the biggest question right now. So if the question is who gets hurt in a huge collision, if the hitter thinks I better slow this down or I'm going to get some of the brunt of this, until that happens and until players have some fear about that, if you take the impenetrability away and the Kevlar shoulder pads, I don't know how you're going to change it.
I think about Brendan Shanahan. You and I both covered him, and you can remember the almost flimsy shoulder pads that he would have in his locker stall. But that's all he felt he needed. And now when you walk into a dressing room in the NHL, it looks like the shoulder pads I wore playing high school football. And that's what they wear in hockey.
Yeah.
And you can be the most fit athlete in the world. If I make contact with my shoulder to your chin, whether I meant to or not, the laws of physics take over and you're going to do a head injury.
Think about the guys, whether it's Taves, Crosby, Stahl, whomever, that have gone out with concussion. It's got zero to do with ability. It's got zero to do with being able to avoid a hit. It's simply put being wrong place, wrong time. Now, this is going to count. They are going to count incidents like the really ugly situation with Fraser McLaren and David Dzerzhinsky. I mean, that's a concussion that's counted here, and it's got zero to do. Yeah, and the criticism was at the time, obviously, it's got zero to do with hockey. It's something that just, many people feel should either never have happened. And I don't pin that on McLaren specifically, because he's out there to do a job, but it's a really ugly part. And you know, ask Nick Kyprios. There are more than enough guys that have their careers ended or drastically shortened because of a fighting head injury. And we don't talk about them as much as we do the flow of play concussions. We don't.
And the reality is, though, even if fighting was completely eliminated, there still would be concussions because of the combination of the size and the ability of the athlete, the speed of the game, the equipment. And as you mentioned, Greg, the unwillingness of owners to take out a couple row of the most high-priced seats in the building to make the ice a little bit bigger.
Yeah, that's the real unlikely part, that we're going to see that happen anytime soon. So it's a big issue. I don't know where I don't know if the NHL feels it's in a better place than it was a couple of years ago. It was to the point where, and we referenced this a few times, the show after the Chara hit on Pacioretty, we're thinking someone will die. Someone will die at some point in time. And it's, you know, the fact that Pacioretty played so quickly after that made that seemingly go away so fast. And I don't know if that was a good thing. It's a great thing for Max Pacioretty to play again after that. But it's not the best thing to say, look at what can happen with a devastating hit like that. And yet at the same time, 3 months later, he's back up and at him.
I'll cringe sometimes when I see the hits and the replay. Is this a neck injury? Am I going to see someone with a broken neck in a wheelchair the rest of their life because of the head snapping back? And even if it wasn't death, maybe that's even more shocking for a lot of hockey people to see a player in a wheelchair because of the impact of the hit.
Yeah. There was an interview Greg Cronin, the Leafs assistant coach, did with Alex Brownscombe of Maple Leafs Hot Stove. It's really in-depth. Look, he's an Ivy League guy. Cronin's obviously a bright guy. There's a couple things that may simply be coach speak, but I thought I'd bring it up without being overly critical of it. They've obviously heard some of the criticism that they were outshot a lot of times. This is their perspective on this. I'm going to read this as quick as I can. We aren't telling our guys we have to have 10 shots a period or 2 shots on a 40-second shift. We're telling them to make sure we value the puck and that we don't give it away unless we're in a position to generate multiple scoring chances. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out that if you take a shot inside the dots, the rebound will come out inside the dots. There's a good chance it's going to come out in a very productive area. The only time we would change that strategy is if we're down a goal. We're not idiots. If we're down a goal, we will try to encourage some shots because, of course, we are going to change the tactic. But in an ideal world, we value possession over multiple poor angle shots. This is sort of a self-defense mechanism. They were outshot badly. I mean badly for a lot of games the last couple months of the season last year. They're saying, we know there are shot opportunities for us. We just choose not to take them until there's a couple minutes left, and then we panic, and then we want as many pucks at the net as possible. I don't quite understand that. I look, puck possession is valuable, and you're able to track it more than ever, and folks are tracking it more than they ever used to. But I don't know if that's just a little old school. Like, I'm not of the mind every shot is a good shot, but I do think there's a fine line to the point where you can hang on to it too long. And my thought on the Leafs, Jim, is the Leafs don't have enough players. There's one that leaps off the page, and that's Kessel, that can possess the puck well enough that you don't want him firing everything at the net. Even when he had no goals in 10 games, where I'm saying, don't do anything differently. Don't start shooting it from behind the net. Don't shoot it from outside the blue line, hoping it'll bounce in. Waiting and your scoring chances will eventually go in.
And now with Lupul and Clarkson on the team, you have forwards who are big enough and strong enough to go to the net for when those rebounds do happen, that they can make something happen. It's one thing to get the shots, but if there's no one there to make use of the rebound, that's an easy thing for goalies and defensemen to clear in the NHL. It's a two-pronged thing. The one quote in the story I thought was kind of almost defensive is, believe it or not, shots is something that I think can be a misleading stat. Almost poo-pooing those who would go on and on about the shots thing. In his mind, he said, oh, in the hockey world, shots and goals are a misleading stat that people pile on. In the end, it's a result-based business. And if you can win the games, whether you outshoot the opposition or not, is all that matters. But when you do lose games, you have to look at why you lost it. And why did you collapse against Boston? And why did you have issues against certain teams? If ideally you can get the shot through from the point or from a sniper like Kessel and have a big four there for the rebound,
that's fine.
You're probably going to score more goals.
You're probably going to score more goals. But they also had it was like this with Matt Fratton earlier in the season. I think it was like this. This was definitely like this with Kadri and even Lupul. Lupul's shot percentage last year was .262. He scored on 26.2% of his shots. His career shooting percentage is 11%. So you might say, well, he's in better opportunities to score. He scored some beautiful goals last year. Of the 11 that he scored, 3 or 4 of them were just fantastic. But you know, that's asking an awful lot. He scored 11 in 16 games that he played. I don't know if we're going to extrapolate that out and expect Joffrey Leupold to score 45 goals next year. I sure am not. I hope they're not.
I mean, it's not unreasonable to think, what if he shoots 14% this year?
Yeah.
And scores 28 goals or 32 goals, and that's his season.
Yeah. It's very possible. All right, British Open still going on, obviously. We'll keep you updated all morning. Miguel Angel Jimenez and Bello Rafael Cabrera and Dustin Johnson, a three-way tie for the lead at 4 under par. Phil Mickelson hanging in along with Todd Hamilton, Nick Watney. All right, Hamilton at 2 under par. Coming up, the Money Game with Mike Eppel. It's brought to you by your GTA Acura retailers. Visit your Acura retailer today. Here he is.
Hey guys, we're looking at a steady morning on the markets after a pretty good performance yesterday. The Toronto stock market opening the day at a 6-week high. Bank stocks leading the rally. A spotlight on the tech sector. Right now we've got IBM moving higher. This is one of the world's biggest technology companies, and they've raised their earnings guidance, so that's a good thing. Stocks up a little bit. Intel, different story. World's biggest maker of personal computer chips. But what have we been hearing about personal computers most recently? Sales declining. So Intel is warning that that's going to hit its bottom line going forward. Stocks down a little bit. Price for oil close to a 15-month high. The price for gas came down a little bit overnight by just over a cent per liter, but still quite high, around $1.34 per liter in the city. You head to the outskirts and you can pick up a liter of gasoline for around $1.28, if not a little bit cheaper. We do have some price competition in the 905. Nike shares in the spotlight perhaps today after the company confirmed that it has signed Tiger Woods to a new endorsement contract. This is the fourth one he's signed with Nike over the course of his career. They're not saying exactly how much this is worth, but it could be worth, probably $20 million per year, if not more. So Tiger Woods, obviously one of the world leaders when it comes to endorsement deals off the golf course. And Nike re-upping for another several years with Mr. Woods. So we'll keep an eye on Nike shares today.
We'll get more in a couple hours.
Thank you.
Mike Eppel, Money Game. Coming up, Rolling Stone in some hot water, or should they be, for a controversial cover involving one of the Boston Marathon bombers. We ask you your thoughts on it. And the Summer World Cup may switch to the Winter World Cup because it's hot in Qatar in the summer. Hotter than here, even.
Now, more of Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
6:43, eyes and ears on British Open, as we'll keep you updated. Phil Mickelson out there a few shots behind the leaders at 2 under par through 7 holes. Miguel Angel Jimenez, Bello Rafael Cabrera, Dustin Johnson, all 4 under par. Jimenez is just, 4 holes away from... well, actually being able to spend a lot of time on his cigarettes. he will be, I don't know, he smokes, but it's also Angel Cabrera that smokes. They both enjoy it, I believe.
Jimenez is more cigars. Cabrera is more cigarettes.
Yeah, and Jimenez looks a bit like Dog the Bounty Hunter. Just a little
yes.
bit. Yes. Just a touch.
I don't know if his girlfriend / wife is as scary looking as dogs in the show, but yeah, he definitely has that look about him.
Whereas Cabrera doesn't. Cabrera hits the ball about as long as Miguel Cabrera hits a baseball off the tee. So that's the best way to remember that. That's about the only similarity in their physique, we'll put it that way. There's a lot of controversy about this Rolling Stone cover. One of the Boston Marathon terrorists, alleged terrorists, that is yet to go to trial. Dzhokhar Tsarnaev is on the cover of its next issue, and there are people furious about this. And you can imagine, especially in Boston, CVS, the big drugstore chain there. If you go to the States, you see CVS, Walgreens. But CVS is the big one in the Boston area. They won't carry the Rolling Stone and won't sell it. I understand that Rolling Stone isn't Time. It's not Newsweek. It's not U.S. News and World Report. But at the same time, the criticism of Rolling Stone seems to be almost that this is heavy issues get discussed in Rolling Stone. They always have been. They've always had a political slant to their work. I've read Rolling Stone for a year. I probably haven't read it regularly for a decade, but I'll still pick it up once in a while. But I was addicted to it from probably like 1980 till like the late 90s. And there's people just almost thinking this is glamorizing because they've got a shot of him not behind bars, not in a prisoner's docket, but basically, one of the shots he put on Facebook. And there's a lot of people upset about this. And I understand it, but I'm also of the mind that it's journalism. And I find it richly ironic that there are journalists that think this is terrible and would like to censor, if you will, Rolling Stone from covers like this and not really realizing the irony in doing that.
But I can totally understand the anger people are showing and the fact that it looks like they're sensationalizing and glamorizing what happened. If you were a young wannabe terrorist who has delusions of grandeur, oh, I can get on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine. I'll be a national celebrity.
By that point, though, aren't you so far gone at that point that wouldn't exactly be your goal, wouldn't exactly be what you're thinking of?
But why put the picture of him that almost looks like a hero shot from his Facebook? Why not show the picture of him where he is incarcerated, that this is the aftermath of what happened?
Well, still
this
him.
Horrible tragedy.
I know what you're saying. I do really see both sides of it, but I'm not of the mind that Rolling Stone's done something heinous, that's done something hurtful on purpose, that's done something even insensitive on purpose. I actually don't think they thought this would be a massive controversy. Is it because it's Rolling Stone? Because we see other articles, we see other magazines. How many times did Time put Osama bin Laden on the cover?
Every 3 weeks.
Right.
Every 4 weeks.
I mean, Saddam Hussein's made the cover. If you look back, it used to be just called Man of the Year. But if you look back at the Time Person of the Year, Joseph Stalin, two-time winner. He took the title from Adolf Hitler going from 1938 to 39. So, I mean, it's almost the newsmaker of the year that ends up on the cover of Time magazine for their big double commemorative issue at the end. And there are clearly people that would make the case about Nixon, Kissinger, Bush, that people who did not like some of their policies and would consider them terroristic. It's nothing I want to get into about American politics, but I'm just saying you can find somebody. The Ayatollah was Man of the Year in 79, holding American hostages, right?
But in Rolling Stone, on the sidebar of the cover, there's articles on Jay-Z and his new CD Magna Carta. There's Robin Thicke. If they put Jay-Z in the cover and they say on the inside there's a feature story on the story behind the bomber, the governor of Massachusetts and the mayor of Boston aren't freaking out like they are today right now. And Walgreens and CVS are not pulling Rolling Stone off the shelf.
That's what I'm saying. Shouldn't they trust the readers to, and should they trust people in general to know that there's a substantive article behind a picture, and that it's almost a case. I'm not saying Rolling Stone's, modus operandi was to glorify this or basically, but it is a story of what happened to this kid who seemed like a normal kid growing up in high school, an immigrant to the country. The guy was on the college. The guy wrestled in college. The guy was very engaged in a lot of groups. And then all of a sudden this, basically over the course of it, this isn't Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris. This isn't the Columbine shooters. This isn't the Sandy Hook shooter that you're throwing on the cover and going, hey, look at this, clap, clap. It's the furthest thing from it. I don't think it's being glorified in the least.
But Rolling Stone grossly underestimated the passion of people and the sensitivity and the raw nature of this, how fresh this is in people's minds by doing this. If they had put Jay-Z on the cover and put a sidebar, we have an in-depth story on the bomber, we're not even talking about this. And maybe journalists are saying, what a great story Rolling Stone did on the bomber. Why didn't Time or Newsweek do this? But it looks like they're trying to cash in and sensationalize what happened to their benefit.
Do you think that's people's perception, or do you actually think they are? I just don't think
no,
they
no,
would
that's have... their perception.
Yeah.
That's why you have to be so cautious and careful about this as a publisher, Rolling Stone, about what happened. That's why you take the easy way. Put Jay-Z on and then let people know inside this issue, we also have an in-depth story on the bomber.
In their internal meetings, we'll move on from this in a sec, but in their Rolling Stone internal meetings, aren't they looking around going, well, we didn't realize this would be a big deal, but then they're kind of eyeing each other going, we're going to sell probably 10 times as many copies because people are talking about it. I wouldn't have known he was on the cover. I don't think now anymore to go and see who's on the cover of Rolling Stone, and it obviously used to be, it's like People magazine. It used to be such a huge deal, Rolling Stone magazine was. Because you couldn't get your news anywhere else. There was no internet. This is where you'd find out about bands and learn about your favorite artists. And there was just some iconic covers, obviously. It's like Sports Illustrated. When we got Sports Illustrated in the mailbox, it was a huge deal to get it back when we were kids.
When I first had a subscription to SI, I lived in Nova Scotia, and that was the only link to sports news in the early 80s in rural Nova Scotia was SI. If it wasn't that, I had no idea what was going on in the world.
Yeah. I'd be curious to see what the sales are going to be like. I don't think any kind of massive boycott. And as we know, I'm trying to think of boycotts that actually work, that don't actually give the product more attention. I remember the movie Basic Instinct was coming out, and a lot of gay and lesbian groups were coming out saying, this is terrible. The killer in the movie is a lesbian. That's not, you know, after decades of having straight people be serial, the hot serial killers with ice picks.
How could this be?
There happens to be we are offended and hurt and offended by this. And, Basic Instinct's number one for 8 weeks. It made Sharon Stone. A couple of things in the movie might have made her.
Because it's human, but it's human nature, though, right? Like, if it's that bad, I'm intrigued to see what's going on.
Yeah, they banned Bret Easton Ellis's American Psycho book. This is what happens when you get a ban. Frankie Goes to Hollywood was like that. This DJ heard "Relax" by Frankie Goes to Hollywood, said, "I'm not playing on my show. I'm banning it." Became front page DJ bans "Relax," but people are like, "Oh, I've never heard the song before." Now
and
I'm going to go listen to it.
Didn't the video become number one, too, after that?
Yeah, and they probably made a racier video because of the ban. I don't even remember what the timeline of it was. So is it too much Frankie Goes to Hollywood on the show this morning? Probably already, right? Just even the mention of it. I think that's how it works. All right, the Qatar World Cup gets in the news yesterday. Sepp Blatter, everyone's favorite FIFA president. This guy's, you know, honestly, Gary Bettman and Bud Selig have nothing on Sepp Blatter. They really don't. They're pretty damn good human beings and damn good at their job compared to Sepp Blatter.
Saints compared to Sepp.
He is considering or asking the governing body and the executive committee of FIFA to move the 2022 World Cup in Qatar to the winter. Why? It's like kind of hot there in the summer and stuff. Qatar can have temperatures of 50 degrees. I actually heard Sid Sixero give the long-range Doha forecast for Qatar. It's basically like 44 there today, high, you know, it feels like 53. Sails up to a nice weekend high of 46 or 47. Then it cools down to about 42. But the bottom line is it might be 32 in January or February when you're playing world-class soccer in searing, someone might die heat.
It's even more perfect. I have the website here. The average Doha temperature in early February is somewhere between 22 and 25. Which would be perfect weather to hold a World Cup football match. And on Expedia, you can get a room at the Best Western
Thank you
Doha
for looking that up.
For $139 a
Does
night.
Does that have negative stars?
No, it's actually, no. It's a four-star hotel in Doha. The Best Western Doha is
four-star. There's not that many Best Westerns that are 4 stars in Ontario, are there?
I think they jack it up a little bit and make it a little classier in Doha. The point being is you can get a reasonably priced hotel room in Qatar at that time of year. And if you're playing a soccer match when it's in the early to mid-20s, you're probably going to get the best effort from world-class players as opposed to when it's 46 Celsius.
Well, their whole bid put together things like, hey, we're going to have air-conditioned stadiums. Well, how the hell are you going to do that if they're open air? I'm a little confused as to how the players are going to feel. It's one thing to have cooling jet or, you know, how many of those stadium things we see on NFL sidelines can you bring in and push on to 70,000 fans in each stadium?
Well, I mean, it's fine for those football players who are sitting 2 inches in front of those fans, but once they step away from it, it doesn't really do anything.
Yeah. So the best thing to debate is I would guess after the Super Bowl would be the best time to do this, but that you're going to take the whole month of February. I don't know when else they could really do that. December with Christmas, and they need 5 weeks to play the tournament. A 32 team. You know, round
but,
robin
but
and then knockout tournament.
Would FIFA care about the Super Bowl? Would they even care on the world stage?
TV would in America. You can't be having, you know, semifinal. You certainly can't have a World Cup final the Super Bowl weekend. Cannot do it.
Unless they
can't have it, as Mike Singletary would say.
Unless they avoid matches that weekend and have prelim matches the Wednesday or Thursday or something.
And it's going to get lost in the sports calendar. I mean, it's in the U.S., with the U.S. team being not bad, it gets some attention, but it's because it's June, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Right? I mean, imagine if the World Cup was going on right now.
We'd love it.
You wanted Winnipeg, Saskatchewan last night. Imagine Brazil, Italy.
Holland, Germany. Bring it on.
6:55. John Hamm did a great job in the monologue last night at the ESPY Awards. We'll let you hear a little bit of that coming up next. Keep you posted on the Open Championships. Miguel Ángel Jiménez, Bello, Rafael Cabrera, and Dustin Johnson have a new co-leader. Four players at 4 under par. We'll tell you about that next as well.